I don't even wish that on Joe Pesci. He can live.
Yeah, you know, talking about...
Okay, the grand permission of letting people live that is, like, radiating through this entire f-ing film. Plotters, welcome to this month's podcast. I'm Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm. And you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
Thanks, Madeline. Today's episode is about eight heads in a duffel bag.
It was from 1997 with Joe Pesci, and did not write down this actor's name. So, actor, if you're listening to this podcast, what?
I didn't write down his name at all. In fact, my notes strictly referred to him as Guy.
My notes refer to him as generic John Cusack. I feel like they tried to get John Cusack for this role.
They took John Cusack, put him in a copy machine, and then copied that copy 80-100 times until they got this guy.
It's like Corey from Boy Meets World got old and then time traveled back into 1997.
Yeah.
That's the perfect description. Mwah.
I also have a headcanon theory that they
headcanon.
Yeah, let's just get ahead of all of the jokes
that
now.
I didn't do that on purpose, but we can proceed as if I did.
Yeah.
Here's my fan theory. Yeah. They called it eight with the number eight heads in a duffel bag because they wanted to be at the front of the shelf at Blockbuster Video.
Instead of just one head in a duffel bag? Eight?
No. Because when you file things alphabetically, numbers come
right.
First.
That's why I was thinking, like, instead of one head in a duffel bag, because that would be at the very, very beginning.
No. It's the number eight.
Eight. Right. So it's going to come before the ace.
Yeah.
But one would come before the number eight.
If it was spelled out.
No, if it was spelled out.
So you do one through infinity and then you start A, B, C, D, right?
Right.
But because it's an eight, it always comes before any of the other letters in the alphabet. So one would come before eight.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
God. hobby podcast moment. Like, the energy is not with me today. And I'm sorry.
Okay, so the day that we're recording this is like the real first day of fall, as far as I'm concerned. You got the rain, you got the colors, it's cool.
A solid chill in the air.
Yeah, and so like it's the kind of day where you just want to curl up with a sweater next to the window.
Under a quilt.
Yeah.
Warm beverage.
Maybe some soup.
Mm-hmm.
Grilled cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even Pitch agrees.
Pitch is like, why aren't we doing that right now? Cuddle puddle. Let's
right,
do it.
Right. This is a cuddle day.
And where was this energy for Hocus Pocus?
Or cats. Or any other thing where we said you could make a lot of noise. Now I'm just standing on this paper, bump into every paper bag I see. Meow at you.
This is going to be a fun pad. This is going to be a fun podcast, y'all. That voice came out.
You meowing at me? You meowing at me?
Hey. Eight zombie lunches in a duffel bag.
Okay, I'll allow it.
So we're going to start where we always start. How did you come to this movie? For me, it was the podcast. Thank you, Madeline, for recommending it. Like, I had all the feels, and I will get into it later. But I don't remember hearing about this movie.
I knew it existed, but I was in junior high, and I was like staunchly into horror then.
Mm-hmm.
Or musicals, God bless.
This would have come out my 10th grade year. So I was like getting into high school when it came
out.
Right,
and you're 1 year ahead of me. So like I would have been 9th grade.
Yeah.
And I was super obsessed with boys. Don't worry, I got better.
I never got better.
You're still obsessed with boys?
I'm still obsessed with, not boys.
Thank you. Anyways, yeah. Did it show up on your radar at all, Jen, this movie?
Yes, for some reason, I had like a headcanon that this was like an, again, yes, jokes. And
it's funnier when you say my jokes that I didn't know I made.
That this was somehow like an unofficial sequel to Don't Throw Mama Off the Train.
Yeah! Yes, I kept thinking it. I kept thinking the Don't Throw Mom Up from the Plane plot would come up. I've only ever watched that once, and it was, you know, 3 decades ago or whatever.
Yeah, and that was Danny DeVito, not Joe Pesci. And I'm pretty sure it's a different director. So I don't know how I got that in my head, that this was somehow, like, related or in the same world.
Was there just, like, an entire genre in the 90s where it was, like, mafia guy meeting regular Joe Schmo? And then...
I'll give you the pitch meeting.
Yeah.
Okay? The pitch meeting is... It's like this. The guy's from Goodfella, but zany. And every like white guy at that conference room was like, yes, yes, that's fantastic. Yes, what a good idea. It's never been done before 8 times. Somebody get the guy who wrote My Cousin Vinny on the phone.
It's like the idea of a mafia member. Like, you always wanted to be in a gang and mafias. It's like when people like romanticize pirates. But
and I would. Thank
yeah.
you, Taika.
But I think it works for pirates more than it works for mafia, just as like characters go. I don't know. Like, I think it's kind of odd that there are some people out there who are like fantasize about being in a mafia, and then they did movies of generic guys crossing paths with mafia members.
You know, I have struggled with this several times, but when people are murdered and people act like it's not a big deal, I have a problem. Because people have died. Even in Hocus Pocus, I'm like, it ended with dead children. It started with dead children. It ended with dead children. And that was the happy outcome.
And you know what's great about Taika Waititi's pirates?
Tell me. We could talk about Taika.
We could always talk about Taika. We know him on a first name basis. Not really, but we wish. Anyways, they actually address that in Our Flag Means Death. They talk about like how casual, like murder is a big deal in that universe. In this universe, though, we got 8 heads in a duffel bag, and it's just okay if you're a mafia guy, because that's just it's a living.
I thought that would be limited to 8 heads, but no.
Now there are 8 murders that take place.
Yeah,
murder. You're such a big fan of murder.
It's so fun to see Paddy, whatever his name is, in this new Game of Thrones and remember that he was in that movie.
It's just Bolognese. Andy, it's just Bolognese. He was one of the Andes. Never mind. Plotters, for references to that, you should go and check out our Hot Fuzz episode. Though, I don't know if you ladies remember this, but... Our Hot Fuzz episode, which is a movie about police officers, did come out in May of 2020. And do you know what else happened in May of 2020? The murder of George Floyd. And I have never gotten over it because that was my pick. And I am calling myself out for being a...
It came out in May.
We recorded it in April, but it came out in May. But still, like, what the kind of a coincidence is that?
I mean, yeah, but... Also, we have a history of weird coincidences, like picking Pet Sematary and then Pet Sematary, the new one, came out. And like, we didn't plan that.
We did
you
not
know, like,
plan that.
I have the most recent version of this. Huh? We talked about Mrs. Potts being a costume in Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
And then...
She died.
Angela.
We talked about Taika. Bring it back. Somebody step on a mirror and walk under a ladder. We can't. Nothing happened. Dear
Black
God.
Black cat.
Yeah. Taika, you're going to be fine.
You're going to be great. I mean, like what? Like, I heard he got married to Rita Ora in secret a few months ago.
Well,
congratulations. Yeah. He's fine.
I don't even wish that on Joe Pesci. He can live.
Yeah, you know, talking about...
Okay, the grand permission of letting people live that is, like, radiating through this entire f-ing film. I'm doing you a favor. I ain't myrtleizing you.
Joe Pesci. Does a good mafia guy.
Ray Liotta did pass on, though. And he was the Goodfellas Goodfella.
Yeah, but that's been a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Back to the movie. So I think we all kind of talked about where we, well, like our history with this movie.
Yeah.
So I think the only logical path is to go into some Sean facts.
Sean facts.
So good.
One of these days, I'll finally import that into the machine and we'll just press a button and it'll be so not in the moment. And
I don't mind it being in the moment, but sometimes it's nice to have that artificiality.
Yeah, I guess you could. Like, but then Jen will try to get too creative with it and it'll be like, thank you very much, a Sean fact we got. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Or just add that reverb that I do for patroning the peculiar.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I love that little reverb.
Mm-hmm.
It also means I survived listening to our own podcast all the way through without, like, dying of cringe.
All right. So, dear lady friends of mine, we're going to play a little game. We're going to play a little game of how much did this movie tank in the box office?
And what you're telling us is it did tank.
It wasn't a huge flop.
I am surprised that this movie probably didn't get its budget back.
Would anyone? Yes, let's start there. Let's with the budget. Let's guess on what our budget.
I'm so bad at this. It was $10 million for a glorified vacation and zany antics.
Okay.
See, 1997, looking at the star cast, I mean, they got the dad who I think was still pretty, not like up there. Joe Pesci was probably their highest paid actor. I'm going to go ahead and call it at 5 mil.
Okay, 5 mil, 10 mil. Lydia is the closest without going over. Well, nope, you both went over. Sorry. $3
million. $3 million in 1996 money for a 1997 release.
So how much did it make at the box office?
We have to guess.
It
didn't tank too bad.
I'll go first.
Okay.
It made, I'm going to say, $2.5 million.
I'm going to say...
$1.
You guys are awful. I'm going to say that it made... You said it was how much? $3 million to make?
$3 million for the budget.
$3.4 million.
Okay. You both didn't go over this time. That's good.
Failing in new ways is my special skill.
Failing up, I think they call that. Mm-hmm. Box office was $3.6 million.
You got closer.
Suck it. You made 600 grand, but you spent it on advertising.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I know about this movie was that they were advertising it pretty heavily, as far as I remember. But anyway, that's the box office. Budget is going to make no sense at all when I mention this next Sean fact. Will Smith was offered a co-starring role, and he didn't take it, but the role went to David Spade.
Mm-hmm.
Guesses on how much Will Smith was offered for that role? $10
million. No.
They saved themselves.
It was so bad. He turned down $10 million.
This is after Independence Day money, right?
Yeah.
And what's that other space one? Men in Black?
Yeah. I mean, like, that was kind of ballsy of them to ask Will Smith after Men in Black and Independence Day to be in their film called Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
Like, we could offer, here's the thing. Sometimes you just do things for the gasp of it. We could offer Will Smith $10 million to be on our podcast, but I doubt that's his going rate right now while he's off in India finding himself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm flabbergasted why they decided that they were going to offer somebody three times the movie budget to be in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The La Parisma Hotel in this movie is allegedly haunted and was featured on an episode of Ghost Adventurers back in 2009. The first two films Joe Pesci was in 1997, the other one was Gone Fishing. Both did poorly.
Mm-hmm.
The first of only two movies that this one was directed by Tom Schulman. The second is releasing this year, Double Down South.
I don't think that was planned. It's another coincidence.
That's our coincidence. Take us safe.
Yes.
The director also wrote Dead Poets Society, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, What About Bob? This has got very What About Bob feels. I've got, I've got to say, and Medicine Man. He won the Academy Award for Screenwriting for Dead Poets Society. Mm-hmm. And the main character of Charlie Pritchett is played by Andy Como. His resemblance to Tom Hanks helped him gain the role of Forrest Gump in the 1996 music video for the Weird Al Yankovic song Gump. So that's, you know, if you've seen him before, it's probably that music video. Or the fact, I think he was like, he was some Hydra doctor in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too.
Oh, okay. So he's had a prolific acting career.
Oh, yes, yes. Diane Cannon is the first woman in the history of the Motion Picture Academy to be nominated for Oscars both in front of and behind the camera, and she was born in Tacoma, Washington.
Fun fact, yay.
Mm-hmm. That was the chick?
That was the mom.
Oh.
I really liked her, too. I think she did, like, as far as, like, characters go, she stands out in my mind.
So. Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, Sean had to, there really isn't very much to this movie as far as Sean facts go. So he was pulling some out here. David Spade is born on the same day as actor-comedian John Leguizamo. So they could have been, I mean, Joe Pesci could have been in the Super Mario Brothers movie, I think. He could have fit somewhere.
No, Danny DeVito rules.
Danny DeVito wasn't in it. It was Bob Hoskins.
I meant Bob Hoskins.
All of these people are the same person in my mind. So.
It really is kind of true.
It's like you can't tell any of, I mean, like, personally, I can tell Bob Hoskins and Danny DeVito apart, but they are very similar. They could be brothers. And I like both of them. They're really fun actors.
I have a whole slew of actors who are all the same person to me all the time.
The first time I ever saw Bob Hoskins in anything was in that Cher movie called Mermaids that also had Christina Ricci and Winona Ryder. Mm-hmm. And then seeing him in the Super Mario Brothers, I was like, yeah, I like this guy.
I think we should make a habit of saying one of the doppelgangers' names in movies just so that Sean can rage. And he listens to the podcast like on his headset at work, so I would probably hear him across the factory floor. Like, I could just be like, man, I really loved Bob Hoskins in Twins. And he'd be like, do you remember when Daniel Radcliffe was in The Hobbit and he was just so good?
I really, do you ever see Elijah Wood in, what was that, Swiss Army Man?
Yeah, that's so funny. And yeah. Do you got one? Do a doppelganger joke for Sean.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jen, you could also say, you know, in Swiss Army Man, it also starred Shia LaBeouf.
I haven't seen Swiss Army Man.
Okay, that's pretty good. Oh, what about Jeff Bridges in No Country for Old Men? No, he doesn't actually look like that guy, but I've never seen it, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know what? I do, like, there's this guy, the guy that, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I think. No, it's definitely something Dean Morgan. The guy from, he's in Walking Dead. He's my brain.
Is the main actor in Walking Dead?
No, he's the Negan.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if him in anything else other than that.
Well, he's in, he's always like, there's this other guy that looks just like him that. Nah, it doesn't even matter if I can't remember their names. It's not going to be good on the podcast where we use words to describe things.
Yeah, but like as we're describing the main character of this film is like the miracle whip of John Cusack's. The miracle whip of Tom Hanks's.
Yeah.
You know, Danny DeVito was really good in Batman and Robin as the Iceman.
Going back to that Twins reference. That's bringing it full circle. And you know what also is full circle? The circumference of a head in a duffel bag, and maybe eight of them, which has two circles in it to denote the number eight.
Our segue magic today is just amazing.
I, you know, the props person who had to be like, okay, what size duffel bag is going to fit eight heads in it? And then did they just bring cantaloupes to like a Dick's Sporting Goods and like just shove them in there till they,
I want to know who was modeled, who modeled some of these heads.
It's the guys who show up later. Yeah. It's all those guys, all eight of those guys. Remember the scene? We'll get there.
Okay.
I've got a few more Sean facts. All right. I thought it'd be best to just lay them all out there we won't have any with there's none really involved in the plot. So,
okay.
The credits contain security for Mr. Pesci, Tommy DeVito. Tommy DeVito is the character that Pesci played in Goodfellas. There's a little phone call somewhere that happens in there that says security for Mr. Pesci, Tommy DeVito. Okay. So that's a thing. And Joe Pesci is fitted with a dental prosthetic featuring a gap tooth.
Yeah. Every time he opens his mouth, he's got three teeth on one side and three teeth on the other. And I stared really hard. I was like, is his teeth really like that? And I just never noticed. And now you're telling me it's fake?
Yeah. It's because that gold tooth got knocked out of his mouth. If you remember the gold tooth from Home Alone, that's where that happened. Joe Pesci's last leading role in a movie was 14. This was Joe Pesci's last leading role in a movie for 14 years, and his next leading role would be in Love Ranch in 2011.
Like, this movie made him take a break?
Make me take a break, I think. I would just kind of, I don't know, I would vacation on this one. I was trying to think of a head pun for, but it just didn't work.
I'm not sure of editing. You leave in whatever you want.
Yeah.
Speaking of Segways, that guy who, like, was the CEO of Segway died.
On vacation.
Driving off the ledge with a Segway. That's my Segway.
So depressing.
Opening credits. This was done. This is an Orion production. You know, do you remember Orion from the 90s? They, like, had their hands in everything.
I remember their video opening. I feel like I'd watch VHSs with them, and they would have this blue Orion logo swish across the screen.
Yeah. And then we hear in the background some music playing, and then
it starts with "Die, scumbags!"
Da 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 da.
Yeah.
So we hear the gunfire, and then we kind of go into like this whimsical music.
Jen said it sounded like the music from Mirror Mask, but I think that one's a little more trumpety, carnival-y.
Yeah, this is more like, you know, wah wah.
Tango, I think Naomi said.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a tango.
Okay, yeah.
Which, you know.
It fits.
It kind of fits the whole feel of the movie, really. Not that the music was overwhelmingly significant.
Yeah, I mean, there was like one song that pops up a couple of times.
Yeah.
And the credits. But I think that's like the only song that's supposed to be significant. So, and then we see this, you know, I think we see a guy walking into a warehouse, and that's Joe Pesci.
We see his legs, of the legs of dead people. Like living, one set of living legs, eight sets of dead legs.
Yep, and you can count them. They're very obviously, and this is, it was the first shot in the film that really was like, okay, so they're like, you know, we know there's eight heads in a duffel bag, but then they actually show the eight sets of legs, which is like, oh, okay, yeah, it was really good use of film language.
Yeah, I guess so. The dialogue pursues that Pesci's going to have to deliver these heads by noon tomorrow, or else other heads are going to roll, see? And it's these Italian-American stereotypes with like the, oh gosh, I almost said wife beater, and we don't say that anymore. You know, the Hanes tank tops, the wide strapped, and they're like, and they're like shoveling coal, and they're obviously going to dispose of the bodies in this incinerator. Right. But I like to think of it as a literal chop shop.
Well, you do hear like a chainsaw coming in before you actually, like, I think when you see Joe Pesci's legs walking, mm-hmm. you hear the chainsaw, and then you actually see the chainsaw. So that's what they use to cut off the heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're like, you got to get these to Big Set by tomorrow, and your flight leaves soon, so get a move on.
He's like, oh, right. And then it cuts to him sitting in the car, like listening to a song, but he's eating with like dead body parts in the car with him. And I'm like, if you're used to certain levels of gross, like mm-hmm. you just like don't care anymore. Like if, say you happen to work with students who did not control their bowels, mm-hmm. like, and there's nothing you can do in the moment to deal with that, like you can eat your lunch while smelling poop smell. You can just do it. Like it's a thing.
Humans are notorious for adapting to situations, no matter how atrocious they are.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he wanted some fries or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, the song that is playing on the radio was "Do You Love Me?"
Do you love me?
And he's like eating like, "Do you love me?"
Yeah, it's pretty. It's pretty weird.
Yeah.
But he pulls into
Newark International Airport because they're in New Jersey, of course.
Yeah, and he gets out of the car, puts the duffel bag down while he goes into the trunk, and we're cutting back and forth. We see Guy, like, checking in, and like checking some packages.
Yeah, he has a very similar duffel bag. I noted this guy as generic John Cusack in my notes.
Fantastic, because that's accurate. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts back to Pesci. He's getting guns out of his like super gun packed trunk, and like a security walks up, and I'm like, ooh. And then he goes like, hey, well, how you doing? And the guy just like nods at him and walks by, and I'm like, oh, right.
On second viewing, that security guard specifically looks in the trunk. The actor who is playing him,
yeah.
He looks in the trunk. He's like eyeing down. And that trunk is full of so many guns.
Well, it is America and it is pre-9/11.
True.
So
be like, oh, it's just this guy in New Jersey who's, you know, got a lot of guns.
He's traveling pretty light, in my opinion, huh?
Yeah.
I hate that for us, hey, but we're going to.
What is this, Texas?
Yeah.
Okay. You look at me like I got my mom's pasta fajol on my face. What is this about?
My notes go messy trunk equals future evidence. Nope. Because it never comes back again. It was just like, you know, this guy is a gang member. So, or he's a mafia guy because he's got the New York accent.
Yeah. We all of these cuts back and forth, they establish Pesci as like this absolute jerk. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing cool about this guy.
Because he goes ahead and he takes the gun from his trunk is used so that way he can frame a woman in the airport security, which pre-9/11 airport security.
They basically tackle that woman.
Yeah. And he
slips the gun into her pocket in front of him at the mm-hmm. metal detector.
Right. And she goes ahead and gets caught. And as everything's getting scuffled, he like kicks the bag through the metal detector.
Mm-hmm.
And then he picks it up and he walks off.
Well, he picks it up, takes it over to the slide, X-ray. And he acts like he's picking it up from the X-ray while nobody's paying attention to him. But I thought it was a little clever detail.
It's a clever detail, but it's also important to note because it comes back around. My note about that, do you want to hear about my note about that?
Go for it.
I don't think that would fly today because you're in an airport. I mean, it's not just about the head puns.
That's true. That's true. Any pun that you can get in there is important.
Yeah.
That scans.
Also, puns come up later in the movie. Spoilers for everything.
Yep. So, cool.
Yeah, and then we get to him in the plane, and that kind of goes back into him being kind of this jerk.
Yeah, Cool Whip helps. Miracle Whip helps. helps a woman put her bags up, and he's established as this nice guy. And then he puts his packages. I think he does it rude. He takes the entire compartment mm-hmm. with two packages. Not cool. But then Pesci shows up and he's all like, are these your packages? Miracle Whip's like, yeah. And so he takes them down. He's like, here, put them under the seat in front of you. I have this important family heirloom and I need this whole compartment. And he puts it up there and shuts it. But then a guy with live organs bag comes on and he's like, I need that specific compartment for no good reason, right? He should have it on a seat next to him or like in his lap or some business. But, you know, Deus Machina, right? That'd be fair. Like the mechanics. The god of the machine says that we need that to be a conflict.
The plot demands the overhead compartment to get used for human organs, not human heads.
Yeah, which is funny enough. So the flight attendant is like, you need to check that. It's oversized. She's like, I got a measure. She says, no, it needs to be checked. It's clearly oversized. She starts to walk off with it. He tries to bribe her. I love this woman.
Yes.
She is like the only black woman in the film,
mm-hmm.
but she's just like, you're trying to bribe me? What do you think you're doing?
What I like about her is she's not like she's not portrayed as stereotypical black, which was huge in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't the sassy one. She was a competent woman doing her job and was not swayed by somebody who just bulldozes everyone.
She's probably the most the service workers in this film are portrayed very accurately for service workers.
Yeah.
I feel like that's accurate.
There's a couple that are a little bit. A little bit. There's a couple that I not very believable. But she is not one of them. She is square. She's perfect.
She's on the dot. Her professionalism is great.
And I get 2 minutes of her and I'm so mad about it.
I know.
And I didn't manage to pause the credits long enough to get her name. But I'm going to IMDb it right now.
Got it.
So hold on, because we're going to name her because I don't remember seeing her anywhere else. And I bet it's probably because she was like, hey, I'd like to work in Hollywood, but not be put into. Ooh, I can't spell heads and talk. Sorry.
Great. Okay, you found her?
Yes. And she's unaccredited. but IMDb had her in there. Her name is Terry J. Vaughn.
Terry, if you're listening to this podcast, what are you doing listening to our hobby podcast? But also, we think you're great.
Right?
Yeah. Like, it's a small moment, but like, knowing that the director could have been like, oh, you need to be more sassy, got to be more black. And if the director's just like, yeah, just act how you want to act. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to act professionally and I'm going to act like, not a stereotype, but a human being.
Also, bribing a flight attendant should be a federal offense if it's not.
You know what's interesting? I think it was Kaylee Cuoco, who did the flight attendant. She was mentioned. I had heard in passing on the radio this morning that she wanted more people to tip flight attendants. And you know, it kind of goes back to, why are we having to tip flight attendants? Like, I'm all for tipping because I think it's good to do that. And I think that, but I think flight attendants should have a livable wage.
I mean, like,
and why is it that it's the workers that work for tips that don't have a living wage? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much risk involved in having to live that way.
Yeah.
Like, you're having to appease people that you really shouldn't necessarily have to be appeasing just to get your wage. I mean, I understand that for like, you know, that's what you do with a manager.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a choice over who you work under more than who you have to serve.
Right.
I also maybe would point out that the worse time you're having, the more you need the money, mm-hmm. the harder it is to provide the service that would give you the money.
Right. That's why if I was an evil dictator, anybody who had not worked in 10 worth of like 10 years of customer service would have to go into the service industry for like 18 months, like every 10 years. Like if you haven't already accumulated 10 years worth of customer service in your work history, then it would be one of those things where, oh, you are someone who is a hedge fund manager. Well, every 10 years, you're going to have to work in customer service for 18 months, starting in September and going until the following, not the February afters, but so you'd have to work through customer service for like
holiday season
twice. So that way it drills into you and you always have to. And then you could only get out of it after you've accumulated 10 years worth of customer service. And it's mostly things, it's going to be for people who think the customer service isn't that important, or it's for people like teenagers. Because that's always the argument. Sorry, I'm going to get off my soapbox.
No, that's okay. I was just thinking that it makes me mad that like the hardworking pregnant waitress who's being left a $100 tip, like it's hard enough to be a pregnant woman, I assume. Never been, but like the postcards are nice. Like, you are such a good guy because you're creating this act of charity. But if I'm finding out about it, it's most certainly virtue signaling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's garbage. Maybe she should be able to have a baby and be fine without having to work at Denny's at 3 a.m. and serve your pompous ass.
That was such a nice little fluff piece of the kid who sold lemonade so that way he could afford his dad's, you know, foot surgery. Instead of just his dad having affordable healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about, I remember I had a coworker who got sick, God rest her. And I was just about full time. I think it was a 36-hour employee. And they asked us if we could donate our PTO to her. And I was like, I mean, I did because I liked her and we worked closely together. But I was like, should I have to donate my PTO?
Mm-hmm.
Or because she has this illness that eventually took her life, maybe you just give her the time off she needs?
Right. It's depressing.
I, for one, welcome a robot overlord to optimize our performance based on what we need to function as humans.
I can't wait until we are all absolved into the mushroom collective.
Oh, that's better than the, I want to be a fungus.
I know. They always seem like such fun guys. Back to the movie.
Sir, you're only allowed 7 heads inside your bag.
Anyway, that's the head count they're looking for.
Yeah, no more than 7. There are 8 in here. We're going to have to put it into cargo. And it's like, so long as it's the first bag that comes out, the poop chute. Sorry.
Terry J. Vaughn. Thank you for being in this film.
You're a national treasure.
And she's like, her IMDb profile is like extensive. She's been in everything that is black.
Yeah.
She was on the Steve Harvey Show.
Nice.
Yeah. So she was in Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say we should do Friday, but then I thought,
We are white women.
Yeah. That might not be good. I mean, it's why we didn't end up doing BAPS.
Yeah. So Joe Pesci's character, who I refer to as Bill, because like the first time I actually paid attention to his name, he was like using a pseudonym. So he's noted as Bill in my notes, but his real name is Tommy. I'm going to call him Joe Pesci.
I didn't write his name down at all. What I did do is spell Pesci phonically so I would remember to say it right every time.
Good. I wrote it wrong too in my notes.
I thought this entire thing was going to happen on the plane. So when they land and get off, I was like, oh, weird.
Yeah. So Joe Pesci is a jerk and the guy sitting next to him, he's like trying to be nice to him. They're like, oh, I think we got off on the wrong foot, and this is the reason why I'm going down to this this location in San Diego. And Joe Pesci's like, I'm going to sleep now. Good night. And I don't know if you guys ever remember like flying on a plane in the 90s. I don't ever remember these seats being that far apart, even in the 90s.
Oh yeah, they got money ticket seats.
Yeah,
like for sure.
The plane does land, and that's when Joe Pesci's looking for cargo, and he spots a bag, and he grabs it, mm-hmm. and he goes into the bathroom, and he opens it up, and he sees that it's not actually his bag.
Yes.
Because his bag has been taken by the guy sitting next to him.
Who grabs it he's talking to his girlfriend when he grabs it off of the carousel.
Yeah.
And he notices she's in a bad mood right away, and she gives him the we'll talk about it later mm-hmm. line, which I can't stand.
Right. Because he is currently getting picked up not just by his girlfriend, but by her parents.
Yes.
And he has said on the plane that I don't think our parents like me very much.
They haven't even met me before.
Yeah. So Joe Pesci's freaking out. The only thing that he has is when I first saw it, I was like, oh, it's a script. But it turns out to be
a screenplay, too. Yeah.
Right. But it turns out it's a book and it has Charlie's information. It says, if found, please send to da 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 da.
And it says sleight of mind.
Yeah.
Is the title of it.
Right.
This is where my notes, by the way, because I don't remember having seen this before. I predict, which is always me wrong. I predict that we want Pesci in jail.
Yeah, I said in my notes, Joe Pesci's character deserves all of the upcoming headaches. Knock, knock,
knock, knock, knock. And the title of that book, it's kind of a head scratcher.
Getting the puns out now. Also, wouldn't the bag have gotten flagged? I mean, like going through the carousel and everything, wouldn't they still have like, even back in 97, 96, wouldn't they still have like x-rays?
I think they do x-ray your bags before they put them on the plane.
I'm pretty sure. Well, I mean, putting them on the plane, but taking them off the plane?
No, they're probably to put it on, but not to take it off.
Okay.
Because they'll have already, it would be too redundant, I think. And when you're getting stuff out of the plane, you're just doing it as fast as possible.
Okay.
But also, I don't know the inner mechanics of working at an airport. So if I'm wrong, please contact us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com.
So Charlie meets his girlfriend's parents. His girlfriend's name is Lori. His girlfriend's mom is named, I always want to call her Annette, but I don't think it's Annette. She keeps getting called called Bear by
Dick.
By Dick. Yeah. Oh, and then I was like, I predict that Dick will be a prick.
Yeah, no. It just writes itself.
It does.
So Pesci is like, oh shit, right? And he calls probably the number on the book mm-hmm. that he finds. Enter David Spade, picking up. He's dressed in scrubs, and he's obviously a roommate. And he's all like, hey, I'm, and then he names the dictator, right?
Gaddafi.
Is that a dictator?
Muammar
Gaddafi?
Yeah, he was the guy who, like, I want to say it was, like, a Libyan dictator? I don't know anything about politics outside of the U.S.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't his name, but I was like, eh.
Yeah.
So Miracle Whip is being asked after by Pesci, and Spade doesn't give him anything. And he's really quick-witted, but he's also really mean. And then at the end of this really fast exchange where he gives him absolutely no information, he goes, tell me something. Tell me if this sounds like a phone hanging up. And he hangs up the phone, and Pesci's like, son of a...
And then he breaks the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a huge Spade fan, but like this I thought was really well written for him. And he really did have like a really good jab or two.
I do like a little bit of David Spade, but I just can't do it in spades. Okay.
I mean, I laughed. I'm sorry, Naomi did laugh. Yeah. But when David Spade knows how to get a jab in, he like knows how to deliver that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we cut to a big villa, and then I realized that it's not a villa, it's a hotel. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably a villa that is now a hotel, but I thought it was their house.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, they're rich off the backs of service workers.
Yep, and then we should establish that the mom's an alcoholic.
Yes.
Sorry.
So after they establish the fact that she was like, I just said I could use a margarita. It doesn't say that I would get one. And then she's like, you could just be fine. We're on vacation. She is the door opens up. One of the bellhops comes out and is like this is Paco. He's kind of a recurring character.
I thought he'd be a bigger deal because he's everywhere.
Yeah. But he and the mom, they kind of have a bit of a connection going on. And I was like, is this gonna like
float? A little bit. He like dances her around and stuff. Oh, we totally missed the part where the dad made Miracle Whip sit in the back with
mom
Bear.
Yeah.
Who I do refer to as mom in my notes. And then they all fall asleep except for the dad driving. And well, the ladies fall asleep.
Right. Well, I think everybody falls asleep except for the dad. And he's just like, we're here finally, you know, and everybody wakes up.
Yeah.
So.
But she dances out of the car with Paco. It's a red Jeep, by the way, if you care.
Well, it kind of is important later.
I know.
But like they were making eyes. I was like, is this like the dad's going to turn into a huge dick? And then she's going to like find that she prefers Paco's company because he's just so much more. But it doesn't go into anything. It kind of missed opportunity.
Oh, hey, do you remember a time before cell phones?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is then.
Yeah.
And, dude uses the Pesci uses the payphone at the airport. I believe that's this part.
Yeah, and he's calling the guys who cut up the heads. I just call them the head guys.
Yeah.
In my notes, and they're like, "Look, Big Sep expected this 2 weeks ago, and you can't, you know, screw this up or anything else, or else."
He gets one more day of an extension.
Right.
They're like, "Okay, tomorrow at noon, right?" Mm-hmm. And then now we're back in the hotel and everybody's getting into their rooms and Pepe the dog.
Oh, yeah. It's like a little Scotty dog.
A Yorkshire Terrier.
Yeah, Terrier. That's it.
I'm terrible at dogs, what type they are and stuff. But there's only 15 minutes left at lunch, so unpack later.
Right.
So convenient. Leaving the bag unpacked is convenient.
Right. Charlie goes in and it almost looks like Lori and him are in separate rooms.
I don't. Think so. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But he like goes in. He's like, okay, why are you being so standoffish
She's
towards
like
me?
She's like brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
Her hair is perfect this entire film. Isn't that irritating?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, I want a divorce.
She's like, we're not even married. Basically, she wants to break up.
Yeah. This is where my notes say girlfriend is the worst, but I amend that several times because there are lots of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Have we mentioned that she races the cars? I think he is the way that he mentions it to.
She's a race car driver.
Yeah. He doesn't say it's a race car driver. She races the cars is how he says it to Joe Pesci. You know, what's interesting if Joe Pesci had actually. Oh, but he wouldn't have known. If Joe Pesci had taken the time to talk to this guy, he would have known that his name's Charlie. Probably, you know, would have found out, like, because it says on the picture, Lori Bennett on her, in the picture where she's wearing the race car suit.
Hmm.
He could have seen that. And he would have, I mean, if he was, like, actually paying attention, this probably would have gotten solved a lot quicker. There wouldn't have been this movie.
Yeah, probably. But he he does that thing I hate where he takes her face in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Hate that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's okay if Jen does it. But if I see other people, like, ew.
Even if they're like supposedly in like a romantic.
She just said she doesn't want to be with you anymore. And you're
That's true.
I can change to keep you. And he holds her face. And she's like,
yeah,
like maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, because he's like, "There's, I'm going to make sure that I change your mind this weekend or something. There's something, something's going to happen this weekend that's going to change your mind."
Right.
And it's and everything else that happens in the movie.
Big character changes are so hard that, and it's such, it's just an empty promise. I mean, like, we all change over time, right? And God knows there are things I would like to improve about myself, but I think it's very hollow to be like, and it will be fixed now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to change your mind. We've been together for a while, but I have never met your parents. We haven't seen each other in 6 months. You've made up your mind about something, but I'm going to change right now.
Right.
Yeah, you got to be in the right headspace for that.
So, Jen, you're going to come up with a bunch of puns for our D&D game, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Great. I've come up with some, but I mean...
Is Blinky's world full of puns?
Yeah, because it's based in Xanth.
Yeah.
Got it.
Oh, by the way, applauders, if you would like to watch Abraham from our Santa Claus Conquers the Martians episode play Dungeons, like a homebrew Dungeons and Dragons with me, like once a month, follow us on Twitch at Captain Blinky is the username, and the show is
Magician
Blinky. I've done that several times. Magician Blinky is the username, and then Magician Blinky's Bizarre Adventures is the name of the show.
All right, so everybody's going downstairs for lunch because they got 10 minutes before lunch just stops getting served, and everybody heads down. The mom says, "Oh, I forgot something. I'm running," and so she runs back into her room, and then you see her go into Charlie's room,
mm-hmm.
and she's putting a little present because he got presents for them, mm-hmm. but he left the dads on the airplane, blah, blah, blah. So she wants to return the favor.
Yeah, it's a small silver box.
Right. And she's like, she puts it on the bed. And she's like, I don't think so.
And she puts it on his bag, which is on the bed.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I don't think so. And then she puts it into the bag.
Then she walks. She's like proud of herself, walks out of the room. And then I was like, well, that was close. Mm-hmm. Right. And then she walks back into the room. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. Mom finds the heads. And yeah. She freaks out and she goes into her room. She pops a lot of pills and
like a whole handful of pills. And then she starts downing some clear liquor.
And we don't know what kind of medication she's on.
Yeah.
But generally medication and alcohol are not a solid thing, especially.
She said those pills make her woozy. If mm-hmm. a pill makes you woozy, you don't take it with alcohol.
Right.
Also, hysterical woman is hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
Even the word hysterical is sexist.
So you know what's interesting about this character and why I kind of like her in some regards? Later on, we find out that maybe she has been traumatized by this, because later on, we find out that she knows she may have a connection to the mafia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
But what I didn't catch means like my net's got lots of holes.
So, I mean, for me, when I saw this the first time, I was like, okay, so she's obviously freaking out because it's a head, and she's going to the first thing that she has comfort to. Second time I watched it, I was like, oh, she could be reliving some past trauma.
Well, and I don't know what a normal reaction to a dismembered body part is. That in my long life, and it feels so long today, I've never come across a body part.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen my share of dead bodies.
Yeah.
But like just a part of a dead body has not been a thing for me.
Yeah. Just randomly. Like it's one thing. I mean, you probably had some like warning that you were going to see a dead body before you saw the dead body.
Yeah.
So if you just opened up someone's bag and suddenly there's like a head and you can tell very clearly it is the head of a human being.
Yeah.
And only the head of a human being.
Yep.
Like, I don't know how I would react with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So maybe her freaking the freak out is like totally acceptable. Mm-hmm. In terms. Well, here's response in grief and response in trauma are two things that are largely impossible to quantify for each person. So I've talked about this before, but my fright response mm-hmm. is like flop and friend. So I tend to freeze. So, and it's a learned behavior, so I don't make it worse, you know? And then I friend, like try to make the best out of a situation. But hers is like total, it's flight, wait, what's the five F's? F's. Fight, flight, friend, flop, and something else.
Okay.
Anyways, she flights at first, and then she fights. Because most people, I feel like, have two of those things at least. So she freaks out, drinks, and then she runs downstairs into the lunchroom.
Thank you for listening to part one of our review of Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag, a Plotter. Naomi and I are just getting back from vacation. So here's a quick note just to let you know that we'll be back in 1 week for part two of our review. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.